This is G Bush, host of the Barbershop on 92.3 The Fan. You are listening to the Browns Huddle Podcast right now.
And welcome to another episode of the Browns Huddle Podcast. This is episode number 46. I am your host, Jason Hand. We are part of the Zedia Network, which is media spelled with a Z. For more information on the Zedia Network, you can find them on Twitter, at Zedia Network. If you are a Cleveland Browns fan and have a story to tell and would like to share it, hit me up on Twitter. My DMs are open. You can find me there at Browns Huddle. You can also find this podcast on Twitter at Browns Huddle Pod. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star review, and please share this show because it helps more than you'll ever know. This week, we have an exceptional guest coming to the huddle. He's here now, host of The Barbershop, every Saturday, 8 a.m. to noon on 92.3 The Fan. He's also the co-host of the Cleveland Browns Tailgate Show, Game Days 8 to 11, also on 92.3 The Fan, Garrett Bush. And you can find him on Twitter, at GBush91. Garrett, welcome to the huddle, man.
Glad to be with you today, man. Thanks for having me. Definitely a pleasure to be here on such a momentous day, obviously, with big news with the Browns, right?
Oh, my goodness. What awesome news. Yeah, we're going to definitely cover that, man. Jadeveon Clowney is now a Cleveland Brown opposite Myles Garrett. Wow. AB is he's just balled out this offseason.
Man, he's outdone himself again. He's just done pretty much the unthinkable. Like he's a magician at this point. If you look at just the pieces that he's brought in, and just look at not only the pieces he's brought in, but look at the price tag he's got them for. You know, these are guys that are upgraded as far as their skill sets and their upside and what they can bring to the table. But also look at the price tag he got them for. I mean, these guys, you know, from Malik Jackson to coming in 1-year deals, Tat McKinley 1-year deals, now Clowney $10 million 1-year deal. He wanted him last year, but he actually comes back this year, gets him for a better price, and has a better a player behind him as an insurance policy if the injuries come and if he's not as productive as he would like. So, and that's just talking about up front. We're not talking about the linebackers and the secondary help. So, I mean, he's just done a masterful job of just building on what Dorsey did to start the progress, and now he's just building us towards what I think everybody's ultimate goal is, Super Bowl, right?
Oh my goodness, that is just from your lips to God's ears, man. We've been waiting a long time for something like that in this town. Before we get into the Browns headlines, and obviously we're going to cover a lot of Jadeveon Clowney, Garrett Bush, you seem to be everywhere in Cleveland sports. You know, I hear you on the radio all the time. I see you on Twitter. When did you discover that sports media would be your career?
I never really thought about doing it. I thought it would come as far as doing it in terms of playing professionally, whether that would be if I didn't make the NFL or at the highest level with being in the league, maybe if it wasn't anything but the CFL or something like that. But it soon came to bear after I would do my tryouts and pro days and different things like that, that the injuries just took its toll on me. And, you know, I had over 13 injuries. And so, you know, the cool thing was, you know, I double majored in college and I was in the College of Business. So I knew I could get a job somewhere. So after, you know, I came out and got a job as, you know, a financial advisor in Charlotte, I kind of, just put myself and threw myself into the real world. And 2007, 2008 happened. And the whole mortgage backed housing crisis happened. The recession hit, and it just basically dried up any chances for anybody in the financial business, any sectors, to any make any money. I mean, you know, you had Bear Stearns and Morgan Stanley and Merrill Lynch and Bank of America, all those big banks and financial houses closed. So I came back to Ohio and was thinking, like, what do I want to do? So at that point, I went to work for the Cleveland Indians in season ticket sales. So I get there, we're chilling, and, you know, I'm there. And the Indians at that time had Cliff Lee. They had Victor Martinez.
Yeah.
Cliff Lee had just came off as Cy Young. So I'm thinking, like, oh, we're good. We're great, man. The Indians looking promising. They were right in the middle of that run where the Indians every year, they say every 5 years, they say, oh, we got our window. They were in that middle of that window, and they trade both of them. So I come into work one day, and they're like, we don't need that much staff. We're gonna lay you off a little bit, you know?
Uh-huh.
So the great thing about it was I did get unemployment, which was cool because employers could fight it. They could have just been like, no. So one of the things that was cool is I did have enough money saved up from working when I was a financial advisor to kind of use that along with my unemployment to kind of figure out where I wanted to do and what my next move was. So I was on the couch one day and I was listening to Bruce Drennan. And I used to tape his show all the time or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was talking to some guy. He was telling Gene, hey, it was a caller that basically said, hey, Bruce, big fan of the show. How would you give advice to a guy that wants to get into broadcasting? And he said, Gene, hook him up with the Ohio Center for Broadcasting, now the Ohio Media School. And so, you know, Gene goes and, you know, gets him that information. And as soon as he said it, it just hit me like, you know what? That's what I want to do. I had always, you know, I would yell it into the ether about, you know, people not knowing what they were talking about, or I would just get mad at certain takes, but I took every cent I had. I was living in my mom during that time, living in Canton, took every cent I had and I put it for tuition and I enrolled in classes. So pretty much, you know, I didn't know how I was going to pay for the rest because I wasn't eligible for financial aid. I already had a degree. So I was just paying by myself. And basically at that point, I just took my unemployment, my money, and enrolled in the classes because I knew I needed to get some sort of experience in order to even be able to get my foot in the door. So that was just the beginning of me figuring out what I wanted to do.
Yeah, wow. So you took a bad situation. You'd mentioned 2007, 2008 was a bad situation for a lot of people, including people that lost their homes during that time. You know, they were way underwater on that. It was bad in this country at that time. And you took that door closed in that area, and you a door opened in another area, and you went and ran with it, man. That's fantastic.
Yeah. You know, it's not unlike people that are doing the same thing today. Mm-hmm. If you look at the climate of what's going on during COVID, you know, there's a lot of people who have lost their jobs, you know, are behind the eight ball in terms of owing such a large amount of money for rent. You know, mm-hmm. as soon as that rent forbearance goes away, they owe these thousands of dollars in back rent. How are they going to pay that? So one of the things that's been happening is you see in the marketplace, there's so many people that at one point in time, you know, were working jobs that they weren't, you know, in love with. They were just doing it to make ends meet, or maybe the job paid well, or they just had a responsibility with their family. So now when they're at home, quarantined, not able to go do anything, just sitting there stuck, they now had an opportunity to figure out, hey, what's my passion? How can I get creative to earn some more money? And so, you know, people, you know, when tragedy or adversity is the mother and father of innovation. So you just sit there and think, wow, all right, I'm kind of desperate. So you really have to start thinking. And so that's what, at that point in time, you know, I just needed to do something. And you, when you don't have a safety net, that's when you really put your best foot forward because you feel like you don't have the room or luxury to fail. So yeah, you know, at that point, that was my mindset.
I think a lot of people are in a grind right now. You'd mentioned during a pandemic, and a lot of people are struggling with rent and maybe even losing their job. There's a lot of people out there that are in a grind. And through our text messages the other day, you had mentioned that you're grinding. What gets you out of bed every morning, Garrett? What motivates you, man?
What motivates me really is, and this may sound crazy, what motivates me is there's a lot of people out there that look like me, that act like me, or maybe come from the same area as me. So one of the things that really motivate me is, even though I'm on one day a week, you know what I'm saying? My mindset changed when people used to come up to me and say, wow, man, I really appreciate, you know, what you do and how you talk and how you interact with people and how you try to see the best in people and you're a genuine person. And I just really support your show. And for me, I'm just trying to do a show. I never really thought I had an impact like that. So when people come up to you and really feel like and tell you, you have an impact, it changes you, right? Cause then you start to have a responsibility, because now I'm like, wow, people really, you know, respect it and people really hold you to a standard. So now for me, it's all about giving back and trying to give opportunities to people. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to be used. And people say sometimes, oh, it's bad. You're trying to use me. You're using me. You know what I mean? Like, people get mad when they think someone's trying to use them. But it shouldn't be like that. You should be excited to be used. You should be excited to say somebody wants to use you to be able to further themselves, because that means that they see talent in you. They see that you're a person that is willing to give and help out. So that should be flattering. That should be something you aspire to be. So for me, I'm trying to help everybody. People say, how you get on the radio? I'll sit there and talk to somebody for an hour about what I did and ways that they can do it. But all I ask and all I say is, don't take my word for it. Like, be a trailblazer and do it your own way. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm not saying that you have to do it my way, because go be better than me. Go be more successful than me, because it's possible. I can only give you the way I did it, but I'll do everything I can do in my power to see if I can help you become better than me. And I just believe that if everybody did that, we wouldn't have certain issues that we kind of see in society right now, where everybody is just, you know, not looking out for their fellow people, fellow brotherhood, fellow people at all. If you was just willing to be used by other people to help everybody get ahead.
Yeah. For someone maybe needs to hear this, one of my listeners, if somebody's struggling out there, maybe they did lose their job or you mentioned before, maybe behind on their rent, they're just going through some struggles. What's the biggest piece of advice that you would give that person to get out of that hole?
It's all about your mindset. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of the Bible. You know what I'm saying? I'm a person who's a very spiritual person. And so I believe that happiness and joy are where your strength comes from, right? Yeah. Because if you have joy and happiness and you have those things, think about how when you are happy as an individual, right? Mm-hmm. You have the ability to, you don't think about bad stuff. Nothing affects you, because at that point, think about the times when you were the happiest in your life. You had bad stuff happen to you. Mm-hmm. You had adversity hit you. You were sick, you know, during those times. It wasn't like you were fine every second of the day. But when you remember it and you go back 10 years, all you remember is, man, how happy was I back then? Yeah. And that's because your happiness overshadows that. And so when you can keep your joy, it gives you an opportunity to take a couple steps forward. And then when you start your progress of taking steps forward, now it'll lead you to different places to get out of that. Mm-hmm. So the action is movement, doing something. One of the things that helped me and saved me was when I was unemployed and I was trying to do something and find some way to get into the game and do anything, I started a podcast. I started my own website. I started writing my own articles. I created logos. You know, I created this logo. And people, I mean, they were like, what the heck is he doing? You might want to go get a job. Like, you create logos for it, man. Like, you don't know what time of day it is. But you don't know. Those words and affirmation that you put into the universe, it comes back. Because now, me doing that created me an opportunity to brand myself. And then I said, okay, I'm going to call it The Barbershop. So then it was recognizable. So then people said, I'm
gonna love that name, by the way. That's a fantastic name.
And if I would have just said, random guy, G. Bush on the weekends, nobody don't care about that. They're like, who's this guy? But I would have never got a person like you to say, well, let me listen to what he got to say. And it never would have started without you taking those steps forward. And people will come along, scenarios will happen. Well, you'll start to put things together and you'll dig yourself out of those holes. But it starts with being joyous. It starts with being happy. And then that will propel you to taking actions, to doing something and bringing people in your life that can help you.
Yeah. This is all good stuff, G. Bush, and none of this is in my notes. I wasn't even planning on going this direction, but this is awesome. It sounds like you're taking positive baby steps. You know, you started a podcast, you started a website, you created a logo, and those little baby steps propelled you into what you're doing now. So people that are struggling can do the same thing, and it might not be towards sports media. Maybe it's towards selling insurance or being a manager of a grocery store, whatever that is. Just take positive baby steps in the direction you want to go. And it might be, I'm just going to get out of bed, take a shower and get dressed and shave and just feel good about myself. That's a positive step. Next day, it might be, hey, I'm going to go out and talk to some people, you know, and try to make a positive influence out in this world. That's a baby step. And then pretty soon, man, you're well on your way to where you want to go. So good stuff, G. Bush. Good stuff.
Appreciate you, man. It's all about sowing that seed. Without putting the seed in the soil, you're not going to be able to reap anything of the benefits. You got to start putting the seed in the soil and watering it. And then pretty soon, you got trees and vegetables and different things that you can actually see the fruit of your labor.
That's right. Wow. One of the things that I like about you, Garrett Bush, is that you say what you think. I listen to you on the radio. And you're not regurgitating sports takes from other people. Like, you just say what you mean what you say. And even if your listeners don't agree with you, it comes through as genuine. And I like that about you. Where does that come from, man? I mean, is that, you know, how you're raised? Or, I mean, is that just how you are? You just speak what you feel?
I think it comes from the fact that, you know, I'm not afraid to have a conversation with somebody about something tough, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of times people and hosts fall back on talking points and different things because, A, they might not be informed on all the different things, right? Yeah. It's hard to talk about something difficult or touch on a lot of topics when you may have not put the research in or time and energy to research it, or maybe you just might not really understand what's going on, or you only see it in one perspective. Mm-hmm. For me, I don't have a problem doing that because I try to take time to really not only talk about sports, but see parallels in sports, to kind of see sports in a way that kind of shadows and mirrors life. So for me, even if you disagree with me, I'm willing to still give you 3, 4, 5 minutes to explain yourself as to why you feel differently. And for me, I'm not going to get mad at you. I ain't going to hang up on you, because for me, I think of it this way. That conversation is important because if I can sway, I'm just not talking to you. I'm talking to people that may be listening who think the same way as you do. So you might not change your mind about what I'm saying, but guess what? Two or three people who listen might. So it's important for me to let you get your stuff out so that I can fairly, you know, talk about and go back and forth with you about my opinion too. So, you know, I think that's the best part of sports talk. And that's why I got into it. I think people should have more dialogues and talk more instead of one guy sitting there telling his monologues over and over again, saying cliches. I just don't think that's entertaining or productive to a certain extent.
I just like it, man. I mean, you speak what you feel, and you know, especially on sports takes, you know, you have your opinions, and I just like how it comes across. So good job on you. You are the co-host of the Cleveland Browns Tailgate Show on Sunday mornings. At 1 o'clock kickoff, I'm curious, because your show ends at 11. How do you normally enjoy your Cleveland Browns football games? Assuming it's 1 o'clock. Now we're starting to play at 4 and even prime time now. But
well, now it's crazy because they've extended. I used to stop at 11. So usually I'm on now until kickoff. So now I've been doing pretty much the whole, I guess, 5 hours. So I'm in with Jonathan Peterlin from 8 to 11, and then I'm on with Lima and King Carmen from 11 to 1. So for me, I usually get off the air, and if we are in the, you know, the tailgate outside, I'm usually leaving there, and I have to walk a long distance by the stadium to where, you know, we get our cars or whatever. So I go walk, and it's kind of difficult because I don't like to be at a bar. I don't like to be around no people.
Okay.
I don't like being at your friend's house. I don't like that because you never know who's over there. It's nothing worse than somebody being at a friend's house who all of a sudden you watching a game and they get the remote and be like, and you're like, who is this guy? What are we doing here? They turning and watching Lifetime movies in the middle of the commercials, and you know halftime commercials in the league is 35, 40 seconds tops. We missing positive plays, draws, or Baker Mayfield got the ball. All of a sudden, we drive for a touchdown. He turned back to the game, and all of a sudden, the other squad got the ball. You're like, what happened? No, I'm not doing that. I'd rather stay my butt at home in the positive confines, and I'm still nervous when I'm at home. So my routine is I walk back to my car. I even put headphones in and listen to music as I'm passing First Energy Stadium so I don't hear the crowd be happy, sad, or quiet, because then I know somebody either scored, something bad happened or whatever, turn my radio off, and I get home as fast as I can.
Wow. I'm sure you try to get home as quick as possible. Okay. Yeah. I hear what you're saying about going over other people's houses. I was at a friend's house for the Super Bowl. It was the Cardinals against the Steelers? Yes, Cardinals against the Steelers. And there's a field goal. It was towards the end, and my friend's girlfriend, right when the kick was made, you know, about to go through the uprights or miss the uprights, she turns the TV off trying to be funny. And we missed it.
Like, see, here's the thing, man. You know, shout out to your buddy too, man. Shout out to, hey, is he still with her? Is he still
no,
with her?
No, he's moved on to greener pastures, man.
You know, see, this is you. Here's how you know you have a keeper of a wife, a spouse, or whatever. If she's the person that is running around and she's like, all she's doing is making sure people good. She going around to your people and saying, hey. You guys need another drink? You need another beer? Uh-huh. The nachos will be done in about 5 minutes. She, if it's a penalty, she's not about to sit there and say something dumb and try to fit in. She's not going to be like, oh my goodness, it's just the Browns again. She's not doing none of that. Uh-huh. She just goes, see, it was doomed. Yeah. Doing from the start.
Yeah. I left there. I'm like, oh, that's not going to last. Actually, she's a good lady, but
yeah, she's a nice person.
She's not going to listen to this, so it doesn't matter.
It's tough. You know, I had my ex-wife, she would notoriously be like, she would sit there and invite people over, and then the big TV is in the living room, right? Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, she didn't want the TV. I spent the money on the TV. I said, I'm going to put it in the back room. She saw how nice the TV was. She was like, mm-mm, the picture's great. So she said, put it in the front room. Then when Brown season comes, she wants to have people come and sit there and watch in the front room. But guess what? They don't care about football. So now they're going back and forth gossiping, and I'm trying to break down the game. And I'm looking around like, y'all can't go to the other room? This is the reason I wanted it in the back room. I digress. I'm sorry.
You know, yeah.
It's emotionally scarred.
Yeah, we'll even be playing opponents that one of my friends will root for, and he'll be, hey, Jason, man, let me come over and watch the game with you. I'm like, nah, can't do that. Nah. Somebody's going to be really mad, and somebody's going to be really happy, and it's just not going to work out. I value our friendship too much. Let's just not do that.
Let's just agree to disagree on that one. We'll catch you, maybe on a Saturday, you know.
Yeah.
You could talk during a college football game.
Easily.
College football game, that's background noise. You could do, but when them Browns come on about Pete, and this is the crazy thing, and you know it. This is what makes Browns so special, and it makes being a dude the coolest thing in the world. Because here's the thing, we got a lot of race relations in this country. There's a lot of things going on out there. It seems like everybody is contentious and going back and forth with each other. But here's the beautiful thing about the Browns. On Sunday, all of that goes all the way out the window. We don't care nothing about we the best of friends on Sunday. And everybody that's a Browns fan knows when you wake up and it's about 10 o'clock, you start getting that feeling, that little thing in your stomach. Even if they wasn't good, you still get that thing at 10 o'clock because you like, oh, shoot, you know, game time around the corner. Let me see. You get the room. Let me see what they're talking about over here on CBS. Let me put a game show. Let me go over here to ESPN. See what they got over here.
Let's see what Berman's saying. And what is he saying?
Yeah, what are you saying? Yeah, we legit. And now, can you imagine what we gonna be watching like now? We flipping on every channel. We got Red Zone. We over there with NFL Network. We gonna buy 3 TVs so we can just rotate them. You run from your bedroom to this room. It doesn't matter. Why you got 3 TVs? It don't matter. It's the Browns. This is the great thing about the Browns. It's just totally cool. It's totally cool.
You are so right, Garrett. You know, college football, I could be outside barbecuing wings, drinking a beer, talking to my buddies, have the TV on. I might look up at it and see what's going on. But NFL football? No, we're not having any of that. We're going to cook our wings before the game. my wife
already done.
My wife asked me, she goes, how can you sit in that chair all day on Sunday from 1 o'clock to 11 o'clock at night and not move? How can you do that?
And then, because here's the thing, this is why people criticize Roger Goodell and all this stuff. This is why football ain't going nowhere ever, because of just what you said. You can be sitting there in one spot, because if you got already, you got the Browns. So that's one. So you automatically is going to watch the 4 o'clock game, because now with the invention of fantasy, you got every got body got 2 leagues. Everybody got the work league, where it's kind of like, oh, this is just, you know, bragging rights in the office. And then everybody got the, oh, I got $100 on this. You done raised the fees on this one. Don't let it be $150, $175 for the entry and the payout, like $1,000 or something stupid like that. You going to be in front of that TV, tough, rooting for Steelers and everything. Don't matter. Rooting for Ravens, it do not matter. And be mad as heck watching to the fourth quarter like, You give him one more carry. Give him a carry. All I need is 10 points.
Yeah.
That's it.
Come on, Lamar Jackson. Let's rush for 50 yards this quarter, you know?
Come on, man. What are you doing, man? I got faith in you. And even if you catch him playing against the Browns, this is the funnest part about fantasy.
Oh.
Because you'd be sitting there being like, I want you to do well, but not that well to win.
Yeah, I want you to run for 100 yards, but lose by 4 points.
Yeah, but take the L for me. Just do it for me. One time, would you do it for your boy over here?
Oh, man. I'm in a fantasy football league with my brother-in-law, who's also a Steelers fan, so I take to heart what you just said, man. It's very serious.
Truth. It's all truth. Man, especially when you get to them last couple games where, you know, you intently – every fantasy person knows this. You go to the dugout and you ain't got no more players. It's the championship and you like, or it's the final four, you in the playoffs and you looking around like, listen, I'm in the dugout, I'm up 30 points. Now look, he has the kicker and a flex player. This flex guy has averaged 10 points all year. First quarter, this guy catches a 25-yard touchdown. You like, come on.
Man, they kick four field goals.
one of them for 52. You ain't never been this good in your life. You just pulled this on me. It's a beautiful thing, man.
I'm ready for the season. What month is this? What are we at? It's April?
Can we fast forward this? Can we just – is this Madden? Can we super simulate this? Can we just get to the – it's going to be a great – especially, can you imagine what this going to look like if stadiums is at capacity like they planning?
It's going to be good stuff. To help carry us to September, we wait for news like we just heard today. Let's talk about the news of Jadeveon Clowney signing a one-year, $10 million contract with the Cleveland Browns. He's going to be opposite Myles Garrett. What did you think? I mean, I know you've been a big advocate for this signing. I know you've been pounding your chest, beating the desk. You've been wanting this signing. I'm sorry. I thought I lost you.
No.
How do you feel about that. This Jadeveon Clowney coming to Cleveland, man?
Man, if you follow me on Twitter, you know exactly how I feel about it because, you know, for me, this is the coolest thing. I've been running these propaganda trains for these players for about 5 years now. And you know, the crazy thing about it is it's getting spooky because I've been right on random stuff. So when it started with Jarvis Landry, one show I just out of the blue was like, man, you know what the Browns need to do? They need to get a cat like Jarvis Landry. Now you got to think about it. It's hard to predict trades. Like, it's one guy. Like, who says you're going to get that guy? Lo and behold, he goes out, yeah, we tried it. I'm like, this is crazy. You got Jarvis Landry? This crazy. Then, fast forward a couple years, they're like, oh, Kareem Hunt. He's suspended for a year, and the Chiefs cut him. I was like, you know what? He might want to go get Kareem Hunt and sign him up. I know we got Nick Chubb, but this might work. A couple days later, this like, the Browns and signed Kareem Hunt, brought him home. I said, this is crazy. You can't predict this stuff. Then I was like, well, I'm going to just really jump off the roof now. See if I'm good. This is actually something I was right about, but I was wrong about. I said, they're going to hire Freddie Kitchens. I'm telling you, they're going to hire him. And boy, was I right, but boy, was I wrong. Like, I was right about it, but good gracious, was that a terrible move? So I was, when you're right, you're right. You're wrong, but I was both in that situation. And then the Odell Beckham Jr. thing. I was like, you know what? We should either get him or Antonio Brown. People's like, Antonio Brown, I don't want no parts of him. He acts like he has CTE. He's already acting like he has the beginning stages because he's going crazy. And then they get Odell Beckham, and I'm just thinking, like, this is crazy, man. I don't understand how this is happening. And 2 years ago, I started talking about Jadeveon Clowney, even when he went to Seattle. And people thought I was crazy because, I mean, how you just say Jadeveon Clowney out of the air. And 2 years later, this dude is on the roster. I am beyond excited because of what he could bring to the table. And I think a lot of Browns fans are going to be pleasantly surprised when they see what we can do with a guy of his skill set.
You know, you think back a month ago and we were trying to sign J.J. Watt. Obviously, he goes to the Cardinals. He signs a 2-year, $28 million deal. That's a pretty big deal compared to what we just signed with Jadeveon Clowney. Do you think we're better off with Clowney than Watt?
Yeah. Now, let's be clear. I was asking for J.J. Watt, too. I wanted him really, really bad.
But yeah, I think most people were on that train. But when it passed, you know.
He's just like, okay, well, you know, we're not going to be able to move and get him like that. But when you look at it, J.J. Watt is older. Mm-hmm. And if you want to talk about Clowney being hurt, J.J. Watt be hurt, too. Mm-hmm. And he's older. Yeah. If you want to talk about the fit, I think Jadeveon Clowney is a better fit at this point. Because if you lose steps and you are already J.J. Watt and you're 290, that means you're a D tackle. You're not really an end. You're more towards a tackle. We don't need that. So when you look at Clowney, he's a better fit per se than what J.J. Watt does in terms of his skill set. And on top of it, he's younger. He has more agility. He has the foot speed. The only thing that I would say is a little bit different that I would give than J.J. Watt is, J.J. Watt has his awareness, his ability to get to the quarterback. He's done it better than Clowney has done it. And he has better overall instincts as a pass rusher. And I think that's the thing that Clowney lacks. One is elite bend and able to run the hoops and get low, use his rip and that corner, dipping, getting to the corner, finishing at the quarterback. If you watch him, that's not something he does well. When you watch him, his moves are always finished when he's clubbing to the inside or doing the inside move. And that's because he doesn't have the level of flexibility in his hips, even though he weighs less than a guy like Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett bend is elite. He's so low and aerodynamic that he could turn the corner just like that. Clowney don't possess that. However, when it comes to playing the run, Clowney's a monster, and that counts too. So, I think it's going to work out for him in general. I think both of them bring different skill sets. But I think overall it makes the defensive line just super scary.
Do you like the 1 year deal?
I do. Because here's the thing, you got him and Tack McKinley on 1 year deals. Mm-hmm. So what you want to do is you want both of those players to always feel pressure. You want them always to be competing for snaps opposite of Myles Garrett, right? And you also want somebody fresh at all times to be able to rotate on the other end. So there is no situation where, oh, Myles Garrett needs a breather. Because if you look at it during the season, after COVID happened, Myles Garrett didn't have the same level of endurance, the same level of stamina. He just didn't have it. You know what I'm saying? He can go for 2-3 plays and give you that Myles Garrett, you know, that burst, but for the most part, it wasn't there when the season was going on. So now you got Clowney and you got Tack McKinley, and you can use those guys to spell, and you can use those guys to say, look, you want 1 year deals. If you want a major deal, you want a long-term deal, your best opportunity is to come in here, play, show out, put some numbers up, and then go to the market again. You'll be right back in the marketplace in order to get another contract.
See, and I think that bodes well for both the player and the team, the Cleveland Browns. When you got a player that's on a one-year deal, you look at Jadeveon Clowney, he hasn't lived up to the standards of being the first overall pick, but he's got a lot to prove this year, I think. You look at Tack McKinley, also a first-rounder. I believe he was the 26th pick in 2017. He's trying to rejuvenate his career. That's good for the Cleveland Browns. And man, they're going to be out here trying to, like you said, they're going to be out here trying to ball out. And that's what we're looking for this year. This is the year right now the Cleveland Browns have to go for it. Our roster is loaded. We have all the weapons at every single position. And this could be a great year, I think.
This is it. This is the year, like you said. Because if you look at the positions, they have two of the best at every single position. Mm-hmm. The safety position was the worst in the league. Now it's going from the worst to a top three, top five safety tandem. They have the best offensive line in the game. But if you want to look at it, they probably have the two best guards in the game as far as their run production up the middle with Wyatt Teller and what's his name? Drew a blank here. Joe Bitonio. Also, you look at the receivers on the outside, OBJ and Jarvis Landry. Bar none, you got the best running backs in Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. So you two good tight ends. A vertical tight end in Njoku, a nice possession guy that can block his tail off in Hooper. So you got two defensive ends, you know, with speed and Clowney that can play rush the passer a little bit and play an elite run guy that can run and stop the run. And you know what Myles Garrett does. So if you look around, they got two of the best everything at pretty much every single position. And you're going to have to take advantage of that while that door is open. And guess what? They still got the draft. They still can upgrade in the draft, right? It's crazy. Crazy.
We almost don't even need the draft. I mean, we need it, yeah. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's not like we need it. If today we had to start playing games, we wouldn't have an afterthought about, whoa, we got to get a guy. That wouldn't be it. Even today, I heard Albert Breer. I was listening to the Bull and the Fox, and Albert Breer was talking about, you know, this is kind of a, you know, pipe dream. Not really, it's a pipe dream, but you know, you never know which way the board shakes if somebody reaches for somebody, you know, like Mac Jones going three, and then somebody says, well, I got to jump up to get Fields, and then all of a sudden somebody says, well, I didn't think you know, the kid from North Dakota State was going to be there, so I want to jump up and get him. So then they're like, oh, somebody was like, I didn't think the tackle from Oregon would be there. So now you start to see people that are at other positions kind of back up. And he's like, what if Devontae Smith is there, or he's not off the board at 17? Do the Browns go and look and say, well, Odell Beckham is, you know, he's getting $14.5 million this year. Jarvis is 12.5, getting older, multiple injuries. I think one of them is going to have to take a pay cut, or we'll move on for him unless both of them have crazy years. Do you take a Devontae Smith? I mean, I wouldn't be mad at none of it. It just is whatever y'all want to do, man.
I mean, this draft can go in so many different directions. It really can. There's so many options for Andrew Berry. When you look at this roster at the end of last year and you look at it now, just how much have we improved?
I think you've improved enough that I can honestly say, you know, I got a YouTube video that I'm downloading right now. You can honestly say that the Browns are the favorites in the AFC easily. And the reason I say that is because of this. When you look at Kansas City losing their best tackles, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at Kansas City not being able to really run the football, when you look at Kansas City and how they ran the football and how, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers slowed them down in the way that they wanted to do certain things, I really believe that the way the Cleveland Browns will be able to play now is dangerous, because now you can get home with four. You can get home with four down linemen. And if you want, you can bracket coverage on Kelsey in the middle. And now, instead of playing three linebackers, you're going to be in nickel a whole lot, playing three safeties, and you can bracket coverage Kelce over the middle with a linebacker man coverage and one of the safeties in the box. And you say, okay, beat us. Travis Kelce's not going to beat us. So either you're going to throw deep balls to Tyreek Hill every play, or you're going to just ask Patrick Mahomes to run around and scramble and find somebody. And you see that didn't work too well. No matter what quarterback you are, running around doing that is not conducive. So I think the Browns have addressed things that stop the two most difficult people, the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson scrambling, and Patrick Mahomes extending plays, being able to throw the football off multiple levels and platforms. I think they've addressed that by secondary help and a defensive lineman pass rush.
And I think it's going to be a huge help to the Browns that we play Kansas City regular season in Kansas City to be able to give us a little test and see where we're at as a football team.
Gauge that. That's a great answer. We want to go back into that game and we want to say, okay, yeah, we want to see what y'all want to do this year. We want to get a little payback on that. I think we're going to be able to gauge and give ourselves a barometer of where we at. And I'm just excited. Like you said, I just want a super sim. I just want to fast forward this whole situation and get right back to the first game. And I actually think I'm hoping they don't even do OTAs. Man, for me, this may sound pessimistic, but by me playing football, I understand that people get hurt during preseason games. And one of the things that I hated to see was the fact that Grant Delpit gets hurt, Greedy Williams gets hurt. And it's just like, man.
Mac Wilson
hurt. And it's like, you lose all of these people out here doing these drills, like playing in shorts. And it's crazy. Like, if we're going to do that, we need to have, like they talked about, you need to be doing Zoom stuff until it's absolutely necessary to be putting pads on, ready to go. Because like most people are going to see, this is the year where you're going to have the most talent. Because guess what? Malik Jackson's a free agent next year. Clowney, Tack, three free agents next year. You got to pay Baker. You got all these people is coming up. You can't pay all of them. So this year, all in. So make sure they're at least healthy.
Maybe AB can pay all of them. I don't know. He's been a wizard so far. So
yeah, all depends on what they pay Baker Mayfield. I don't. Yeah. If they give him $200 million, then. Chubb, what are you going to give him? I mean, is he going to get Derrick Henry money or Zeke Elliott money? Like, there's a difference. Like,
yeah.
Denzel Ward, I don't know. Does he want Revis money or what kind of break you want? You know, it's just all depending on how they want to evaluate those guys. And that's why I do feel this pick is important, because you got Denzel Ward. If he want crazy amounts of money, do they say, well, you know what? We ain't paying you all that. We'll go draft the corner in the draft this year and let him start and see what he's going to do. And if Denzel Ward walks, that's their backup plan. So their backup plan is hopefully Greedy Williams comes back full speed, does his thing. We draft the corner this year. So in the case that Denzel Ward is just like, give me $100 million, you're like, I'm cool on that.
Well, you talk about two guys with Greedy Williams and Denzel Ward. You know, this is an important year for those two guys. You know, Greedy Williams, obviously he's injured now. I feel like he's going to come back. But this is a prove-it year for him. Denzel Ward, he's got to prove he can stay healthy and stay on the field. So this is also a big year for that guy. We have a lot of players that, this is big time. This 2021 football season, it's going to define their career of which way they're going to go.
That's a great point by you. That's a great point. So think about it like this. Wyatt Teller, he is rated the top offensive lineman in the game. Pro Football Focus rated him a 92.9 as a guard. Crazy. He's going to want crazy money. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like he was a first round pick. He essentially came out of nowhere. I don't understand how you get that good in a year. I don't understand. Denzel Ward, he's going to win a lot of money. And this is, he's coming up. Baker Mayfield, you know what it is. Nick Chubb, we got you. Then you have three, Malik Jackson, Jadeveon Clowney, Tack McKinley. Now you're up to seven. You also have to go back and actually think about it like this too. You still have Nick Chubb to pay. That's, so that's eight people that you got. Hollywood Higgins signed a one-year deal. That's
Andrew nine. Billings, one-year deal.
Andrew, that's 10. You got 10, and we ain't even, I'm trying to think, 10? And then you say, okay, well, Greedy Williams is a make or break. They say he only going to be 85%. He may only be 85% with the nerve damage. That's 10 right there. Grant Delpit, do we know if he's coming back full speed? We don't know. 11. So it's pivotal. There's a lot of David Njoku, 12. Like, he's an unrestricted free agent next year. So there's multiple people all over this roster who have immense pressure to prove something. And nobody has more pressure than Odell Beckham Jr. Nobody. So...
Yeah, you're exactly. You can go all across the rosters, and there's examples of players that have to do something this year, and the rest of their career is on the line. You know,
there it is.
You can miss out on big money in this league if you don't go out there and ball out. So, I for the last 2 years, I've been really excited about our roster. Really excited for the year to start, just like we are now. This year is a little bit different because this current roster, for the most part, has been battle tested. You know, last year we win 11 games. We make the playoffs, you know, in the 17th week to beat Pittsburgh. We go to the playoffs. We beat Pittsburgh. We lost to Kansas City by, what was it, 6-5 points? Comes down to the very end of the football game. Our roster has been battle tested, and we have a bunch of hungry players that want to get back to that spot next year in the playoffs, that deep, and then even further. Are you feeling the same way, man? I mean, this is a little bit different than rosters of the past with the Cleveland Browns. I mean, this roster is seasoned, and I think they're ready to go.
This roster actually has, you know, the most expectation. See, people talked about that Freddie Kitchens roster. Like, and the reason why they played so terribly was because they had expectations. And if you look at that roster, like, okay, and you compare it to this roster, that roster was mediocre at best. I mean, come on. Like, that roster with, you know, who is playing Demarius Randall? Come on, that, you know, Money Mitchell. Like, these guys are not anywhere on this level at all. So the pressure on this team is going to come from, we're not going to be satisfied with just making the playoffs, right?
No, we're past that point.
We passed that ship has sailed. You know what I'm saying? Now it's like, okay, what do you plan on doing? And one of the most, one of the craziest cautionary tales is, think about this. Think about the way people perceive the Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers started off like 11-0 or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They started off at 11-0. And it in a few weeks past that, people were throwing dirt on their graves because they were like, oh, they exposed. They ain't even that good. You know what I'm saying? They've been exposed. So it's like, that's how quickly the narrative can really change on you. So they're going to have to find out, okay, are we really that good? What do we need to do to continue to gel and move around? When you look at the team, the number one thing that really sticks out to me is at every position, they got it covered. They got a coach that's competent. They found a quarterback. And when you look at the rest of the teams in the league and you compare position group by position group, the Browns have that. They have the advantage on paper. But my thing is, how will you handle a loss that you should have won? How will you handle, you know, certain bumps in the road that will inevitably happen? So that experience that they got last year of, you know, losing their best receiver, Chubb was out a little bit. That experience, I think, will push them through and hopefully get them to tough times and get them where they want to go.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the same team 2 years ago where we all as fans and even in the players, you heard it in their meetings and press conferences where we felt like they were going to have a good year. And then week one happens against Tennessee. We get blown out. This is not that team. And one of the big reasons why is Kevin Stefanski. I don't think he's going to let them not be prepared, not work hard. I think that there's a fine line between having confidence in your ability and having confidence in your football team. Then there's a fine line between that and thinking that you're just going to walk through this year, go to the playoffs, and eventually the Super Bowl. You know, Kevin Stefanski is not going to have let us have that mindset. And I like that.
And I think it's really good that, you know, your roster always turns over to a certain extent. So the people that they're bringing in, you know, John Johnson, you know, Troy Hill, what's the middle linebacker's name?
Anthony Walker,
Clowney and Tack McKinley. See, these guys, Billings, these guys ain't never spent no time in the building. So for them, they don't know what it was like last year. So they have to approach everything like it's brand new. So, and one thing that I think we can always hang our hat on is, like you said, we talked about it earlier, all these guys have something to prove. They gotta put good tape out. It is, if you want to eat next year, you have to put good tape out. It don't matter if we good, you want to eat. Like, I mean, you performing for something, like you need a check. So that's the great, I think that's the thing that helps the NBA more, or excuse me, the NFL more than, you know, the NBA and Major League Baseball, is because they've gotten to a point where they understand, like, if I don't play, I don't get a game check. You know, I gotta suit up, be there and be available in order to get a check. Basketball dudes, they be sitting out for rest management. Baseball, them checks is coming regardless. So you don't ever have to worry about a football player, checking out or doing whatever, because one, he's going to show up to the game because he needs a game check. And two, anybody who's played football knows that the quickest way to get your life ended or your career ended is start walking around on the football field going half go. You're asking to get your knee blown out. You're asking to get a concussion, because if you ain't ready to go when you step on that field, it's a wrap. You're going to get hurt. Somebody's going to hurt you, bro.
This is all really good stuff. All right. Players have weaknesses. You know, even the good players have weaknesses. Teams have weaknesses. What in your opinion are the Cleveland Browns' biggest weakness on this roster?
To me, biggest weakness is I think they still need just a tad bit of help at corner. I also believe that they need, and I've been saying this for a long time, I believe that they need a big body targeted receiver. If you look at our receivers, they're kind of smallish. You know, I like big receivers. You know, I like receivers that is big, targets in the red zone. I like big receivers that can go get it, high point to football. And I like a big receiver to complement my other small receivers that like to work on the underneath stuff. So I think they need a big red zone target. I also believe special teams, they got to get the kicker stuff figured out. Like, you know, they keep just parking between Parkey and, you know, then Cyber and then back to Parkey. It's just like, they got to figure that out. And because if you are playing in Cleveland, Ohio, that's a huge part of your game. That's huge, because the wind, the weather, the rain, the snow, all of that is going to cost you games, because them extra points is field goals now. Those are field goals now. Like, you know, that's no longer a gimme. So those are, and people say, why would you talk about a kicker? I never got that, man. You know, it's almost like people don't understand that if you're going to say this position, right, this person by himself accounts for points. There is no other position on the field that directly counts for points by himself, right? Mm-hmm. So if you are talking about some defensive tackle or, you know, a slot corner, and you covet this person, why would you neglect a person that has the ability to win you a game with a kick, lose you the game with an extra point, and you don't value them at all? Like, I just don't understand that rationale. Like, it's just crazy. I don't get it. They're important because they can get points. Crazy.
Yeah, Parkey had a 3 or 4 game stretch where some were even questioning if he was going to make it to the next year. I thought he finished okay. I know Cleveland's a tough place to kick. You know, Phil Dawson talks about that, the legend of Cleveland. I mean, do you think they're going to move directions from him? I don't want to spend too much time on a kicker, but you're right. It is important, because that is one position that can lose you a football game and also win you a football game as well.
You know, I don't know what they're going to do with him. All I know is, you know, they got very low tolerance for missed kicks. You know, they'll fire you in the middle of the week, Tuesday, Monday, after you missed the kick. I'm asking this question, like, can Phil Dawson kick? Do you lose? Like, do you lose some sort of kicking power? Like, is like, excuse me, do you miss, like, or lose kicking power? Like, is that a thing as you get older? Like, is it like losing your fastball? Like, because if we can get Phil Dawson, where you at, bro? Is Janikowski kicking still? Like, is Gramatica still? I don't know, man.
I think I Googled last year, how old is Morton Anderson?
97.
Yeah. Sign him. Let's go.
Man, it's crazy.
All right, AFC North rankings. At this point, where do you rank each team in the AFC North?
You know, like I said, right now, I have to put them, in my opinion, you know, it would either be 1 or 1A. I had them at 2. I had them at 2 going into this period, right? So into the draft, I had them going at 2. So I either got them 1 or 1A with the Chiefs. However, it's starting to get spooky for the Chiefs. Starting to get spooky a little bit. What I mean by it's starting to get spooky a little bit for the Chiefs is this. You got Patrick Mahomes, but slowly but surely, I'm starting to look around the roster, and it's just like, it ain't nothing special. You know, you don't get old overnight, right? I look at the way Seattle does it. Seattle, slowly over time, after they won that championship, you just would see year after year, name brand player after name brand player just fall off, like Brandon Browner, Cam Chancellor, you know what I'm saying? But Malcolm Butler, you know, you got guys like KJ Wright that's still there, but Wagner is still there, but you losing these guys. Richard Sherman, you're losing these guys year after year, and you're still running around with Doug Baldwin. Like, yeah, you got DK Metcalf, but you always had these after my Marshawn Lynch retired. You just got these random, you know, G League like running backs. Like, They're just random guys. They're just, and they got four of them. And every time you look at their stats, they're just evenly distributed. Like one guy has 600, the next guy had 500, next dude have like 376. There's two guys with 200. You're like, that's ugly. I don't like that. That's ugly numbers. Would you give one guy some carries and just stop it, Pete Carroll? Like, it's just an ugly stat to look at. And then, you know, they still going to win 9-10 games because that Russell Wilson is just good. So, you know.
Yeah, if you have a Seattle Seahawks running back on your fantasy roster, you don't feel real good about it.
Mm-mm, unless the waiver. Their whole team is on waiver wire. Like, they're the whole team on a waiver wire. Like, when you hear they always got the sleeper picks, right?
Yeah.
You be sitting on ESPN, and they be sitting there. You know, they always talk about, yeah, he's available in 86% of your leagues. No duh, Sherlock. You think? His average points is 0.6, like, for the season. And guess what? It's week 14. He should be available. What gave you the impression that he shouldn't be available? Man, garbage, man. All day backs, man.
What about the AFC North? Baltimore Ravens, you still have them at number one?
No, man, they're not number one. That got changed.
About 5 hours ago?
That got changed low-key probably like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Like, because to me now, I saw OBJ's his rehab work. And so when I seen his rehab work, I'm like, okay, man, this dude is, he's kind of close. He out here running routes now. Don't let him not be able to, you know, go to OTAs and he's just going to chill because he's going to be real fresh. So I'm like, oh, that's, y'all might be done. And then now we got Clowney. So now they can't even run away. You got two of the most athletic defensive ends in the game. You're not running away from nobody. Like, and then you can spy him with one of your – come on. You got Harrison. You got Delpit back there. You got John the third back there. These dudes is playing linebacker, spying him. Listen, they're not about to let you run read option up and down the field. It's done for them. I'm so glad I could just be like, yeah, go ahead, run that. If you want to, man. No, they're not in there. I think the Steelers will still be, what, maybe 10 and 8?
10 and 8.
17, 10 and 8 or something.
9 and 8.
Nine, yeah.
Or no, what is it? 17 games. Let's do some quick math. 10 and 7, 9 yeah. And 9 and 8.
Yeah, it's, yep.
Well, I got to get used to that.
It's only one off, and we both have so much trouble.
Yeah.
We was like, hold on. Add one, subtract. Yeah, 10 and 7, right? You're like, man. So, yeah, I feel like we definitely better in the division, you know. So, but I can't really throw dirt on the Steelers yet because if you think about it, when you look at the Steelers, the Steelers find a way to be good. You know, I saw them be good with Duck Hodges. Duck Dynasty came out here and beat us, and it was just disgusting. So, I can't write them totally off, but the Browns should beat the brakes off them. They should. You know, that should be, what they're going to do. And I think they come in third, but – Watch out for these Bengals. Watch out for them.
They're coming, aren't they?
Watch out for them a little bit, man. They got a lot of – you might want to watch out for them because they almost beat us. You know, we were scoring points on them, but people forget the first game was close. First game was close to Browns played them. It was on Monday Night Football, I thought.
Well, that was Thursday night.
Thursday night, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second game, they had us.
That was the DPJ last second catch in the end zone, right?
Oh, yeah. They had us. What a crazy throw that was. That was crazy throw. that joint was crazy. Like, I was just like, man, you know, that game probably was the signature game in terms of people being like, oh, the Browns is alive and well. Man, they came back on that. That's crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, that just signified to a lot of people that the Browns is not to be messed with. You don't want to play the Browns in the playoffs. You just don't. And Pittsburgh found out the hard way.
Yeah, I think that Baltimore, in my eyes, has a slight edge only because I think we need to prove to ourselves that we can beat them. I think we can beat them, and ultimately I think we will beat them. But I think it's I give them a slight edge. I have us at 2, and then I'll put Pittsburgh at 3 and Bengals at 4. But like you said, I think the Bengals are moving up the charts pretty quick.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad at anybody that put the Ravens over the Browns, because like you said, I had done that as well. So I wouldn't be mad at all for somebody saying that, because if you look at, you know, the Ravens, you got to prove that you can beat me. You know what I mean? You can't just say I'm gonna beat you. Like, you got to prove that to me. You got to show me.
I can't wait to see it, man.
Yeah,
I can't wait to see it. I thought we were going to see it that last time we played the Ravens, and Lamar Jackson goes to the locker room and comes back out. Oh, my goodness.
See, come on. We had that. What's that kid's name?
McSorley.
The 35, the 35, the defensive back that we had. What's his name? He I don't know who he was. But this guy was getting turned inside out. And what was this? What was the situation where Lamar Jackson would just roll out, and our defensive backs would just get
watch
confused
him.
and stop, and receivers just would run deep, and I'd be like, what are you doing? Why are you not covering him? Kevin Johnson. Only Kevin Johnson I knew played for the Phoenix Suns. Kevin Johnson. I'm like, he's like, come on, man. It was just, yeah, our defense was just not good last year.
I used to love Kevin Johnson, man.
Oh, man. I used to love the Suns in general.
I've got their tattoo on my back, bro.
Man.
That was my team.
Hey, when they used to turn them lights off, wow. And the mascot was the gorilla. I was like, man, this is the coolest stuff I've ever seen in my life. This is I was stuck watching the Cavs. our team couldn't be no more boring than it was. I mean, we had a bunch. Listen, people don't understand. The Cavs was so boring. They looked like the dudes that work for like the utility companies in your town. Right. And they go play basketball pickup games at their lunch break. Right. It'd be like the UPS versus like the sewer department.
I thought you were going to say the Washington Generals.
No, might as well, bro. They might have served in the Civil War. Like, like, you know, you go into the Y, you'd be like, man, I'm up here playing. And you like, these guys are up here. Like,
or who played the Globetrotters? Was it the Generals? Who was that? Yeah.
Man,
anyway, it doesn't matter.
I'm like, this is crazy. It's just crazy how that just it just never ceases to amaze me, that crap.
All right, let's move on. Everybody's talking about the NFL draft. What does that happen in 3 weeks? Is that 3 weeks from it's Wednesday, so yeah, about 3 weeks away. We have the 26th pick. Andrew Berry, the Wizard, has us in a position that I can think back as long as I can remember. I've never seen us in this position to where we're strong in so many areas. We don't have a glaring need to where you're like, okay, we're definitely picking this guy at this position. I have no idea, and most people don't. You see mock drafts, they're all over the board. You know, one mock has us picking this guy, another mock draft has us picking this guy. What are your – do you have any thoughts? I mean, what do you think AB is going to do with that 26 pick?
For once, this is the most unpredictable pick that the Browns have had in years, because, truthfully, we don't have anybody that is glaring or we have any glaring weaknesses. So, you know, for once, we can actually just pick the best guy on the board. So we don't know what their big board looks like. So, you know, who they have ranked where. So probably what's going to end up happening is they're going to just play it by ear the first 10 picks. If the draft falls like they, you know, foresee it falling in the first 10 picks, they'll probably stay pat and just take the guy who they like the most at the 26. However, if you look at it and say someone's drafted, if they had somebody drafted in the late 20s, and all of a sudden that person is drafted higher, it's kind of like, oh, wow, that was a reach. And so what happens is once a person like that reaches, everybody knows it's a reach, right? Mm-hmm. Every other general manager is like, oh, that's a reach. Oh, yeah. So they get on the phones, and now they're trying to make a deal with the next team because now they think, wow, this person who we didn't think was going to be here is now here waiting on us, or we got a chance to get this guy. And so they making moves and making back and forth deals or whatever the case may be to get it. So if the Browns are looking at their big board and people are making phone calls, they'll have an opportunity to jump up and get the guy that they wanted, that they would have never had an opportunity to do if it wasn't for the fact that they have a roster and they worked hand in hand. How many years have we seen the Browns do this? Draft somebody and then do nothing after that. Draft one player and be like, we're done. That's why Mike Lombardi, he's a hack. Like, come on, man. He ain't no, you know, these guys, who is he up there with? It David Banner, or what's his name? Is that his name?
Yeah, him and, yeah, David, is it Joe Banner?
Joe Banner. David Banner's a rapper. Joe Banner. Joe Banner is, they up there. Remember they drafted Barkevious Mingo at 6 and just dusted their hands off and was like, yeah, we'll see you and at OTAs. Trotted him out there like it was done. I'm like, this is it? Other teams is making moves. They're getting free agents. They doing all this stuff. We drafted this kid, and they went home and went to Chipotle and ordered a burrito. Job well done. Let's toast to, you know, let's just go ahead and cheers with our burritos, Joe. Man, it's crazy. Like, now we have an opportunity to be welcome into the real world and actually capitalize on the smart moves we've already made, because we can now say, ooh, you guys are thirsty. You guys really want that receiver, don't you? Guess what? Go ahead, take him, because we're going to be right here to get either a linebacker, either a defensive tackle, defensive end, whatever the case may be. We're here to get the best available right now.
See, and that's what I'm thinking about, Garrett, is every time a quarterback gets picked, which there's probably going to be 4 or 5 of those, every time a running back gets picked, a tight end, even a wide receiver, that's good for us because that moves all the good players back in the draft where we're at 26. I think we're going to get a hell of a football player at 26. I don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be a great football player that's going to start on this football team.
You know what? That's a great point. If you're at home and you are listening, you are supposed to have your pom-poms waving and you're supposed to be rooting. Anytime there's a safety, an offensive lineman, a tight end, a running back, a quarterback, who else? Well, in any position besides a corner, a defensive lineman, or who else? I would even
linebacker maybe.
I think they still would draft a linebacker if push came to shove. I still think that's on the table, because if you look at it, they got, you know, Mac Wilson and Taki Taki and the guy out of with the Colts. But if they got a guy that's staring at them that they got a really, really high grade on, I would not be surprised at all if they went ahead and snatched him up. if anything else is still available in there and it's a linebacker, I think they'll take him.
Maybe Zaven Collins is on the board. We saw him early on a lot of mock drafts, you know, Zaven Collins.
Yeah, I mean, I seen him play, and he's freaky. I like the kid out of Penn State. What's his name? He ran a 4.4. They had a defensive lineman. Oh wait, run a 4.36 as a defensive end. Crazy. But Michael Parsons is his name, from Penn State. He ran a 4.4 at linebacker. That is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'll take him. Oh, we can use you somewhere, son. But I think there's, you know, long story short, there's going to be a lot of people available. There's going to be so many people available. And from his track record, I think he's going to just do what he's always done, make a smart decision.
Some notable first round picks at 26, you know, because this is new territory for Cleveland Browns fans. We're not used to picking at 20 in the 20s, right? We're used to top 10 picks, and we usually have a pretty good read on what direction we're going to go. This is new territory. So what I did, I went back the last 3 years, I looked at every 26 pick, and interesting, 2017, Tack McKinley was the 26th pick in the first round.
Wow, that's such a coincidence, man.
That is a coincidence.
Man, who the Browns taking their first pick in 2017? I think it was
The year before Baker. So would that have been Garrett, Miles Garrett?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Or was that 2016?
No, I think that's him. I think that's the Miles Garrett year. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Miles Garrett. Yep. Also in that draft at 28th, you know, Taco Charlton, 29th pick, David Njoku. We know who that is. Mm-hmm. The 30th pick, TJ Watt. I mean, you know, there are some players that came out of that draft in the 20s. And like I said, TJ Watt was the 30th pick. 2018, 26th pick, wide receiver, Calvin Ridley.
That's a good pick.
Good pick. Safety, Terrell Edmonds, now Pittsburgh Steeler. And Lamar Jackson was the 32nd pick in the first round in 2018. And 2019, defensive end Montez Sweat by the Washington football team. Baller.
All of them is good picks.
I mean, him on the other side of Chase Young, I mean, that's crazy.
It's the best. It's best. To me, it's the best tandem in the league.
I mean, who's the Ryan Kerrigan? Montez Sweat pretty much pushed him out the door. I mean, he's a free agent, right?
Oh yeah, he actually almost retired him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Ryan Kerrigan almost had to go to the workforce. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna put my resume on Indeed.
Yeah. Last year, the 26th pick, this was a head scratcher, I think, by a lot of people, including the guest Jeopardy host Aaron Rodgers, and that's the Green Bay Packers picked up quarterback Jordan Love.
Man,
which was questionable.
Man, this brings up a topic for me. See, this is my problem with this, and I think a lot of fans. And I think a lot of general managers do this all the time, and it's so annoying. You know, the thing that people do and will continue to do is this. People prioritize and romanticize the future because the future has unlimited potential. I can wake up tomorrow and say, that's why people will have conversations and say, if I win the lottery, this is what I'm going to do with the money. But they've never played the lottery a day in their life. And they don't plan on playing the lottery. So how is it that you're telling me what you were going to do with all this money, but you've never played the lottery in your life? Why is that even viable? Like, how's that possible? So, you know, people right now, are always talking about let's plan for the future. We want to plan for the long-term success. We want to not just this year, but 5 years. No, listen, here's the plight. If you don't do anything in 1 year or 2 years, you won't be here to see anything in 5 years. You'll be on the street. You got to win now. Why would you consistently believe that your fan base is going to support you taking L's and promise that, well, we're going to be good in 5 years? And no, you got Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks in your, staring you in your face. Do you know the arrogance level that you have to think we have Brett Favre, one of the greatest quarterbacks to put shoes on? We now have Aaron Rodgers, one of the greatest quarterbacks to put shoes on. You are so arrogant right now that you believe, oh, we'll just draft three in a row. Instead of maximizing what you have right now with Aaron Rodgers and building as much as you can and milking this thing as bone dry as you can by getting receivers, linemen, whatever he want to do, you decide to waste your only first round pick that you got because your team is so good and you put it in a guy that won't ever even play. You know how disheartening that is to the rest of your team? You're not even giving them somebody they can even rock and roll with, you know? So it's just like putting a bunch of poor people in a house and they starving. And then you got a house full of refrigerator food. Open the refrigerator and say, now you don't touch that food now. I'll be right back.
You can look at it, but just don't touch it.
Just don't touch it. You can smell it, but don't touch it. You fool. Like, come on, man.
I think it does a couple things. It pisses your quarterback off, Aaron Rodgers. He should be pissed because, I mean, you need to put talent around that guy. I mean, like you said, he's a future Hall of Famer. But number two, if you're not careful, you're drafting the next coach's player.
Thank you. I don't understand. It baffles me at the levels of ignorance that coaches have. That's my problem with Hugh Jackson. That's my problem. I go crazy when I hear Hugh Jackson talking about I was set up. I'm sitting there thinking, you lack so much awareness and you don't have maturity to understand. You know, everybody's parents told you, stop being so gullible. Just because somebody told you something, you don't believe everything somebody told you. You really think if somebody, your boss told you, it's just your boss, right? Mm-hmm. But there's bosses above your boss. If your one boss says, hey, Garrett, don't even worry about it. Just go, listen, don't come to work for a week. I'm going to just make sure you get paid, though. I'm cool. No, I'm cool on that, bro. That seemed kind of, I don't want no parts of that. Because at the end of the day, there's still consequences. Even though that's your boss, there's consequences for things that I do with other people higher than you that you can't save. So even if Sashi Brown, picking players and as the general manager, say, we're going to tear this thing all the way down to the studs and we're going to get these picks and set up for 5 years. Why would you listen to a stupid thing like that when you know that he don't run the team? He ain't cut no checks. It's just Jimmy and D Haslam. And then you wonder why they said we ain't going to have this. You won one game. They got to sell tickets, man.
They got bills to pay.
They got bills. And you mad? Get out of here, man. Come on. Get out of here. Maybe it's just me and you.
No, it makes too much sense to me, but like you said, that's just me and you. So we're gonna start to land this plane. I know you got things to do. Kevin Stefanski's mantra last year was work. He used that word a lot in his press conferences before the season start. We're gonna get to work, and it worked. This year, it's get better. I've heard him use that. I think this year's mantra is get better. What is your take on Kevin Stefanski's leadership as the head football coach? Last year, we saw a lot of adversity that he went through. I mean, for heaven's sake, we go to the playoffs. He gets COVID. He wasn't even able to coach. He gets blown out a couple games, never lost two games in a row. But as far as leadership, how do you see him as a football coach, and where can he take this team?
You know, one of the things that I think is special about him is, you know, he never really got, you know, too all over the place. Like, he never was really super, you know, ecstatic over wins. Mm-hmm. He was never really too down in the dumps about losses, right? He was always just kind of steady, and you know, he was a steadying hand, and, you know, he basically talked about and rectified the things that needed to be done. He never really bashed people in the public. And most of all, he did a good job of developing players on the run. One of the things that I used to argue with people all the time about was, you know, when you play football, sometimes fans believe that the coach's job is only to call plays and to come up with schemes and talk to the press. But they leave out one of the most important, and in my opinion, the most important part or aspect of coaching, and that's player development. One of the reasons why bad teams are bad isn't because they draft poorly. Yes, drafting poorly hurts you, right? It isn't because you call dumb plays. Yes, you could call a dumb play, but I always argue, and this is kind of crazy, you don't really know what the play is. I mean, when they call a play, like, you run a route, a receiver can run 4 to 5 different routes based on what the coverage is. So you don't know what route he was running. Like, the quarterback can audible to something, and you don't know what the audible is. So unless you're watching the film and you have the call sheet, what the receivers are supposed to run, you have no clue what it is supposed to be. But that's a whole nother story about playbooks or whatever the case may be. But Kevin Stefanski did a really good job of player development, because every player that you have, you're going to have to put some energy, effort into developing them and getting the most out of them on the fly during the season and having them progress. I remember working in my corporate job, and I remember about 6 months ago, this is prior to COVID. We're in the office, and at the time, the economy was doing well. So unemployment was low. So basically, we were having a tough time retaining associates, because people, we would offer a range of how much money they would be eligible for, that we would pay for certain jobs. They would get called for jobs that really weren't appealing as far as what they were doing, but they would pay $2-3 more. So it was like, people were like, oh, I don't care what it is, I'm going to go do that job. And so we would be like, you know, we would be talking to our recruiters and our, you know, our HR department and people that were doing these searches for these people. And we would be like, man, we looking for somebody with some polish. We need them to do this, that, and that. We need some, you know, people that are competent in doing these jobs. You know, we really ain't getting that. And she said something that was really powerful, and it stuck with me. And it made me think about the Browns and sports and life in general. And she said, well, you know what, guys, you got to think of it like this. When you're a leader and when you guys are interviewing these people, you have to realize everybody that you bring in here can't be an A player. Everybody that you bring in here isn't going to be a B player. That's in every organization. Sometimes the harsh reality is you're going to have C players. And the reason you're never going to have A players is across the board is because those A players are good and they know it. They know they're A players. So their demand on the market is higher. They jump around just as much as the unqualified people, because they'll chase a dollar. They know they got a degree. They know they got experience, so they're going to chase a dollar somewhere. So C players, you're going to have to develop them. And if you can develop them to do the job and make sure, yeah, it's going to be a little difficult. But if you can develop them, you have a better chance of retaining them, because they know that you put the time, energy, and effort into assuring that they are successful, and you can put them different places and they'll be loyal to you because you put the time in. It's the same with sports. You know, you're not going to have eight players all the way around the board. It ain't going to happen. You're going to have to develop some people. And so when you look at the Browns roster, exactly what they did. Wyatt Teller got developed. Rodney Harrison got developed. You look at Baker Mayfield, definitely got developed. And that was the big one because you see what he's able to do past week eight. After week eight, you look at his completion percentage. You look at his decision making. You look at what he's able to do as far as diagnosing what they were trying to do to him defensively. He just got better. And then pretty soon, Stefanski kept giving him a little something, dose by dose by dose. And then pretty soon, he's able to, you know, take the whole playbook and able to make bigger plays. So, you know, it's just all about empowering people and making people better and coaching guys up.
You are so right about Baker Mayfield. And I love your analogy because it's true. I mean, that's where the diamond's at, right? When you can develop a guy, he's going to appreciate you. You're going to appreciate him more because you put the work in. And last year we saw Baker Mayfield develop before our eyes, you know, and it was fun to see the process. It was frustrating as a fan at times, but at the end of the day, you know, at the end of last year, you look at Baker Mayfield and even if you doubted him before last year, there's a lot of people that go, you know what? I was wrong. That's our guy. That's our quarterback. So, yeah, you're exactly right about that.
I was one of those guys. I was one of the dudes that were very vocal against what Baker Mayfield was doing. But here's the thing. This is the great thing about it. And this is for all the people that are very down to doubling down on different things. I don't know if that's a new wave or something. I don't know if that's just what people do now. You know, if you're wrong, you just dig your feet in harder despite the facts. There's nothing wrong with saying at the time when I saw what he was doing, at that time, he wasn't playing very well. But as a mature adult, there's nothing wrong with saying, as I got more data, as I got a larger sample size, I'm able to come to a conclusion that he is progressing, got better, where I can change my perception and my mind on him as a quarterback. I got more information. If you get more information and you're able to diagnose and analyze it, there's no harm, no foul in saying I could change my mind. What is wrong with people? That's the way you go about analyzing life. I don't understand that. You don't got to double down on everything and entrench yourself in something that you don't really believe in. Come on, man.
It's okay. Yeah, you're right. It's okay to say that you're wrong, because if you continue to dig your feet in the ground, like you said, your heels, then you just start to look silly.
Yeah, you look corny. Like, come on, man. Like, you look corny as heck. Like, I've seen people on Twitter, you a grown man, like trying to argue these, like, very, like, demonstrably, just, this is so false. Everyone on this site knows what you're saying is not true. And you just keep just hammering home, and you're just no statistics, and you just look like you're 5 or 6 years old. Just, it's bad. It's just, don't do that to yourself.
All right, let's move on to the last segment. So the Browns Huddle podcast mailbag, I have two questions. The first one is at Andy Piccone asks, who is the one draft pick in the first round that would make you rip out your hair? And this is in frustration, not a good thing.
You talk about for the Browns?
Yes. Who is the one? Yeah, who's the one draft pick in the first round that would make you rip out your hair in frustration?
Let's see. They're drafting 26th. So if they were to take, let me see. If they were to take, let me think. There's a couple of people. I wouldn't be too mad about that. Who don't I think is good? If they were to take any quarterback, but I don't think they would be. I don't think the Browns would do that and do it on the board. So that's not. That's kind of cheating, because I know they don't need a quarterback. So let me think of somebody that I would.
We discussed this earlier. I really don't think they can do wrong. I mean, yeah, outside of picking a quarterback or a tight end.
Let me think. I can give you, let's see. Let me see. Got to be somebody. I will do this. Kyle Pitts. So Pitts, the tight end from Florida. Mm-hmm. And the reason I would say that is this. If the Browns drafted Kyle Pitts, it wouldn't be good because Kyle Pitts would just be a regular tight end. Like Kyle Pitts would be a glorified David Njoku, right? And you see what David Njoku wants. He wants to get the heck up out of here because he has to do tight end things. Like he has to block. He has to max protect sometimes. And Stefanski runs multiple tight end packages. So it is not like he's going to be the only person on the squad, like getting touches. Like Austin Hooper, like is going to like get minutes. Bryant is here on the squad, who is a award winning tight end. And if they went out and got him, I would be like, why? You have two of those. And you're not going to maximize him. You got to use Kyle Pitts out of Florida like Travis Kelce. He got to get the ball all the time and early. Like you can't just have him doing regular blocking stuff. He better be the focal point. So I don't think he would be like that for the Browns. So therefore, don't take him if you're not going to use him like that.
Yeah, I mean, even our receivers, our wide receivers, we ask them to block, and that's a challenge for some people, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because they just want to run their routes and catch their balls, but a lot of times, man, we're running the ball or catching out of the backfield, and we're asking these wide receivers to go down there and block instead of catch, and it took a while for them to get the hang of it.
Yeah, and it's not like, and I want to be clear, it's not like he can't do that. Like, it's not like he can't. Mm-hmm. That's not part of his game. He's a solid blocker. But for me, it's nothing more frustrating to see a team have a really good player and not utilize his skill set. It's almost like being like, all right, we're going to have LeBron James, but we're going to go make him post up. I don't watch high school because high school coaches do dumb stuff like that. People are like, he's so big. Go down there and post up. Like,
yeah.
If you don't, oh my God. No. Ridiculous. Come on.
Good question, Andy. But it's our opinion. I think we've talked about this. I don't think Andrew Berry can mess that pick up, man. I think he can go multiple directions and it'll work out just fine. Second question. At Casey_Kinneman, he's a friend of the show, writes for Dog Pound Daily. He asks, is there a player in this year's draft that you would be willing to trade up for? And if so, what would you be willing to give up to do that?
There's a few of them. There are a few players that I would trade up to get. We named one of them. I think Micah Parsons is special. Because I think he is elite in terms of what he can do. Mack Wilson, for me, last year when he was whiffing on these tackles, boy, it was just crazy. Like, I'm like, come on, man. Come on, Mack. You're better than that. I think the Browns need another linebacker. I would trade up for Micah Parsons. I would probably stay pat for Zaven Collins. I think he'll still be there. At 26 or whatnot, I would also trade up if one of the receivers is in the building. Like, so if Devontae Smith is still there or Jalen Waddle is still there in the late teens, and I got to wait maybe five picks, I may jump up and just say, give it to me. I need those. And the last person that I would really jump up and think about actually getting probably would be Patrick Surtain, the second corner out of Alabama. And there's another corner from the University of Virginia Tech. His name escapes me at this point. But those guys, I think I would be willing to trade up to get if they were available at that time. And you say, who would I, how much would I give up? Well, the Browns got two, I think they had 2/3 and 2/4.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I would give up, I mean, I can, if I'm going to trade you a couple places, I got two or three of them, whatever you want.
Like, yes, trade the 26 and maybe a third or something like that.
Yeah, whatever you want to
jump up 5 spots or 4 spots, whatever it is.
Whatever the case is, because here's my thing. Those guys and those picks aren't going to be making that roster anyway. Browns are too stacked at this point to what young guy is making the roster. Think about it. If you are a running back, how do you plan on making the roster? How does any tight end plan on making this roster? How does any offensive lineman they got make a roster? And how does any safety make a roster here? And they got to play special teams too. So it's going to be very difficult for anybody to make the draft to make this team, especially undrafted free agents. So for me, why not package them up, go get you a playmaker, and then really make your team a juggernaut?
You think 1A, 1B would be defensive end, cornerback? Would you see those as two positions that we're probably looking at 26?
Yeah, I would say I wouldn't outlaw defense. I would say defensive line in general, like, because I wouldn't exclude defensive tackle either. Anything that has to do with pass rush ability, I think they'll look at it, and I think they'll do that. With a defensive tackle or defensive end. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, to be truthful, I think they will. Most people have this thing that they won't take a linebacker, but I just think that for me, I just got done watching Ray Lewis, his highlights at Miami. And to me, a dominant linebacker is something that's very undervalued. If you can get a dominant linebacker today that can cover, that can run, those guys are just devastating because you can do so much with them, especially as far as dropping into coverage and spying people and still being able to run downhill sideline to sideline and catch running backs. It's just invaluable. Look at what Devin White did against the Chiefs. With Levante David and Devin White basically locked up everything that the Chiefs were trying to do. And I think that Barry and a lot of people are watching that as a blueprint trying to figure out how they can get faster at their linebacker position.
Well, Garrett Bush, this has been so much fun, man. I just looked at the time and I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to invest in a timer. I really do. You know, sometimes you can get in conversation, especially about the Browns, a team that, you know, we're both passionate about, and you just lose track of time. And that's what happened.
All good, man.
Where can the listeners find you on social media?
Man, you know, you can find me at GBush91 on Twitter. You can also find me on YouTube. You can find me at GBush 9501. So you basically just search me on YouTube. You can just search Garrett Bush. My profile will pop up on YouTube. So I post on YouTube pretty regularly. I think I had a video dropping tomorrow on, you know, breaking down the Jadeveon Clowney situation. You can definitely find me on the Barbershop Facebook page, you could just search Garrett Bush and the Facebook page will definitely come up, and you can definitely get a hold of me, and you can listen to me every single Saturday from 8 o'clock to 12 o'clock during the season. I do the Browns pregame show pretty much from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. kickoff, so you can catch me there. And I do the Ohio State pregame show as well from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock on a Saturday as well. So you guys check me out all those places and definitely hit me up and, you know, let's do it.
And for listeners like me that are out of the Cleveland market, can I just say that Odyssey, the app. I don't know if it's different than radio.com was, but it's a lot better. And I can listen to, you know, 92.3 The Fan on the Odyssey app. It's awesome. So for guys like me, listeners, if you haven't checked that out, make sure you download the Odyssey app, and then you can listen to your favorite shows in the Cleveland market.
And you can rewind up to 24 hours. So yeah. if 8 o'clock is a little bit, 8 o'clock is a little bit, definitely a little bit early for you. Some people, working, you know, guys, you know, Saturday is a day they try to hang out with their family. If you work during the week, or you're doing stuff with the kids, maybe you coach, maybe it's the time you hang out with your kids. You know, you can go do that. You can listen to the show. You can rewind the show up to 24 hours, and you can do that every single Saturday. So that's a good feature of the Odyssey app as well.
Yeah, I've listened to you while I was mowing the lawn, man. I had my headphones on and mowing the lawn and listening to the barbershop.
Man, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate the support, man. I really do. Anybody who knows me, I'm always floored by people who show me so much love and support. And I'm just happy to be able to just, you know, help you guys get through, you know, whatever it is, whether it's shopping, whether it's you out in your man cave, whether it's you cutting lawn or doing chores. I appreciate you letting me be a soundtrack to whatever you're doing on the weekend.
Well, Garrett Bush, this was awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I definitely appreciate it. And hey, I'm enjoying your journey. I really am. I'm enjoying where you started. You know, for me, being a Cleveland Browns fan, I've followed you from you know, a couple of years ago to, you know, I was asking myself, who's this Garrett Bush guy? And then I started listening to your show and seeing you on Twitter, and I've enjoyed your journey. And I know that you're not done climbing. You're going to still climb, and I'm going to be there to watch it.
Hey, man, anytime you need me, you know where to find me, man. I appreciate you having me on today.
I do. Well, I like to end all my podcasts with the Go Browns, so let's go ahead and do it. 1, 2, 3.
Go Browns.
Go Browns.
Yes, sir.